by him surrendering to the teachings of Shripad Madhvacharya meant that he's going against the current of the whole society who has respected and worshipped him and offered him the highest position. That means he will become a laughingstock and an object of criticism and cynicism and condemnation by the whole world of scholars. This means that he would practically lose his caste as a first-class Brahmin for accepting this apparent bogus philosophy. This means not only would he be rejected by the society of scholars, the rejected the society of Brahmins, but even his own family members would condemn and reject him. But Shobhana Bhatt did not care anything for society, friendship, or love of this world, because he had to live by his convictions. He understood what Shripad Madhvacharya is teaching is the highest truth. And even if it means utter humiliation and defeat, I must surrender to that truth and I must live by it. Shripad Madhvacharya awarded him entrance into the sannyas ashram. Upon the initiation, his name was given Padmanabha Tirtha. The word spread like wildfire. This, in the history of the Madhva Sampradaya, was the first major victory by which society at large had to take his scientific presentation seriously. A man of the caliber of Shobhana Bhatt surrendering to him, this is no small thing. Previously, when Shripad Madhvacharya was in South India during his tour, two of the leading scholars of Buddhism, Bhakti Singha and Budhi Sagar, they came in and challenged him for a debate. Because Buddhism was being broken down by its very foundation, whatever still survived of it, by Madhvacharya's teachings. They were the two top scholars in India. They debated with him. The first day, all day, they presented their arguments, and they were so flustered and so confused. Madhvacharya, out of his dignity and respect, he said, "Why don't we stop here? You look tired." And we'll continue the debate tomorrow morning. But what happened is that night, they closed down their camps, and without telling anyone anything, in the darkness, they escaped, never to be seen again. But this particular debate with Shobhana Bhatt was a very, very critical blow to the very heart of the religion of India, which was the misconception of Advaitavad. Hearing about this, a very, very noble person named Sami Shastri, he happened to be a young man who was born in immense wealth. His father was one of the noblemen of the Gajapati kings of that part of India, Orissa and Andhra Pradesh. You know Maharaj Prataparudra, he was the ruler of Puri, but Ramananda Rai, who was all the way down Vijayanagara, Godavari, he was also part of King Prataparudra's kingdom. So they, at the Godavari, Sami Shastri, he heard about how Shobhanabhata surrendered to Sri Padmavacharya. I have to see who this person is. I must meet him. He put aside all of his massive amounts of wealth and opulence and came in upon witnessing the divine qualities of Sri Padmavacharya. Swami Shastri surrendered at his lotus feet and begged him to give him an initiation into the renounced order of life. His family was practically second to the king in the whole Gajapati kingdom. Sri Padmavacharya gave him initiation and awarded him the name Narahari Tirtha. Then he, as Madhvacharya was about to resume his journey back toward Udupi, Narahari Tirtha was eager to follow behind him and leave behind all the things of the world. But Sri Padmavacharya gave him a very, very extraordinary instruction. Sri Padmavacharya told him that there is deities of Sita and Ram in the treasury of the Gajapati kings. I request you to get those deities and bring them to me to worship. With Madhvacharya's divine vision, he could understand the present king would die very soon, and that his heir was just a little baby boy, and that was required for someone to be a regent to rule the kingdom until the child grew up to age to take the responsibilities himself. So he understood that Narahari Tirtha would be chosen to be the acting king. He said, you go back to the kingdom, you maintain the kingdom until the boy grows up, and then you get those deities and bring them to me. So Narahari Tirtha, although an initiated sannyasi on the order of his Guru Maharaj, returned and ruled the whole kingdom for many years. And he was the best king. There was piety, there was love of the citizens. He was a very, very great soul. He propagated charity, religion. I'll tell you something about these deities. Srila Prabhupada explains, and it's also in the biography of Sri Padmavacharya. Originally, these deities of Sita and Ram were worshipped by Maharaj Ikshvaku, one of the original kings of the Solar Dynasty. They were worshipped in Ayodhya, passed down generation after generation after generation. They were worshipped by Maharaj Dasarath, but he didn't understand that this is the same Ram and Sita that was his son and daughter-in-law. But he worshipped them with great devotion. Later on, they were given to Lord Sri Ramchandra. He worshipped them. And Sita was so attached to these deities that he gave the deities to Sita, and she worshipped them with such intimate love and devotion. Then Sita, out of her immense gratitude to Lakshman for all that he had done during the years they were in exile, she gave those deities of Sitaram to Lakshman, who worshipped them with such pure devotion. During Ayodhya at that time, there was one Brahmin who was very old, He had such pure devotion to Lord Sri Ram that he would not eat or drink anything until he had darshan of Sri Ram on that day. So each day, Lord Sri Ram would sit in his assembly room, and he would meet any of the citizens who wanted to come and meet him. He was such an accessible king. If they wanted to present complaints, but nobody had complaints. They would just come and offer their respects. So he would fast until seeing Lord Sri Ram. But some days there was just no issues to be discussed in the assembly hall. So Ram would stay in his own palace. On that day, the Brahmin would fast. Sometimes Sri Ramchandra would have to go to another place for several days. One day, the Lord was away for 8 days. This Brahmin would not take a drop of water or food or even sleep. And he was old. His body was emaciated. It was crumbling. He was actually on the verge of death. On the 8th day, Lord Ram came to the assembly room. This Brahmin appeared, and he was so happy to see Sri Ram. Tears of love were in his eyes, but because of his weakness, he fell to the ground. So Lord Ram was wondering, what is this pitiable condition of my devotee? So he was told about this vow. So Lord Sri Ram told Lakshman that give the deities to this Brahmin. And he personally instructed him, I am not different than these deities. Every day you just have darshan with the deities and then you take prasad. So this Brahmin kept the deities his whole life. But when he was on his deathbed, he called for Hanumanji. He said, now I must leave this world to return to the Lord's abode, but my most precious of all possessions I am giving to you. And he gave Hanumanji the deities. Sri Hanumanji worshipped those deities for ages and ages and ages as his Ishtadevas. Sitaram. This was in the Treta Yuga. In the Dwapara Yuga, you know the story when the Pandavas were near the Himalayas and Bhima was going to get some flowers for Draupadi. And on the way, he saw this very, very old monkey on the path who had a big, long tail that was blocking his way. So he said, oh, old monkey, please move your tail. The old monkey said, I'm too tired, I'm too old, I cannot move my tail. You move my tail. So Bhima tried to, with all of his strength, he could not move the monkey's tail. This was Bhima, the most powerful of the Pandavas. Then the old monkey revealed himself. I am your older brother, Hanuman. And they embraced in great ecstatic love. And at the point of this auspicious meeting of Hanuman and Bhima, Hanuman gave the deities of Sitaram to Bhima as a gift of love. Bhimasena worshipped the deities along with the Pandavas in their castle in Hastinapur, and they were passed down amongst all the great kings of Hastinapur. But after their dynasty was no longer to be, somehow or other, the deities were given to the kings of the Gajapati dynasty, where they were worshipped as the foremost deities in the royal palace of the kings. However, as the ages passed, the worship stopped, and there were simply riches with no puja, no worship, nothing. But Shripad Madhvacharya knew this. And he said, if you go back, you be the king, regent, And when the child grows up, he will be so grateful to you. You ask him for this gift of those deities, and then we can begin their worship again. Shripad Madhvacharya then returned to Udupi, and he had a series of very serious dialogues with Achyuta Preksha. Achyuta Preksha had so much love and respect for Madhvacharya and everything he said, but at the same time, due to conditioning and society and everything else, he couldn't give up his allegiance to the Advaita philosophy. Very difficult situation. And here was his own disciple instructing him. They sat for many, many days discussing the Sutra Bhasya, the commentary of Vedanta Sutra that Shripad Madhvacharya had written. And it was at that time that Achyuta Preksha totally rejected, once and for all, the Advaita philosophy. And accepted Madhvacharya as his own guru in the core of his heart, although he may have given him sannyas and initiation. It is explained that at that time he begged Madhvacharya to give him a new name and a new identity, and he became known as Purushottam Tirtha. Shripad Madhvacharya was teaching the glories of a personal God. But it became more and more apparent to him the great need for the practical application of this through deity worship. He longed for a deity of Krishna. The Sitaram deities didn't come. They came many years later. One day, he had an inspiration in his heart that today Krishna is going to appear from the ocean. The same route that we came today, Shripad Madhvacharya traveled. He was in so much ecstasy on this day. As he was traveling, he composed and recited in beautiful song a composition which is one of the most sacred prayers to this day of the followers of Madhvacharya. It is called the Dvadasa Stotra. He was singing the song, composing it with tears of love in his eyes as he was walking to the beach. And right about where we're sitting now, he sat down in the sand, continuing in ecstasy to compose the Dvadasa Stotra. He completed five chapters. And right at that time, a boat coming from Dwarkadham happened to pass. A terrible storm ensued. The mighty waves and the winds made the boat lose its balance, and it looked like at any moment it was about to sink. At that time, an even more unfortunate situation took place. It got caught in a sandbar, a mountain of sand which was deep in the ocean, and the winds were blowing, and the boat was helplessly just being bashed by the waves. The captain of the ship and all of the others, they were in total distress. They did not know what they could possibly do. But then they saw, sitting on the seashore, this beautiful effulgent sannyasi with a merciful smile on his face. And they cried out to him for help. He took a cloth and waved it in the air. And with that wave, all the wind subsided. Not only that, but the boat was free from being caught in the sandbar and just effortlessly floated right to the shore where Madhvacharya was sitting. They were so very, very grateful that they came off the boat, which was filled with great, great riches. They said, "We want to offer you anything you want from our boat. You saved our lives, you saved our fortune." Sri Padmavacharya said, "I believe you must have some Gopi Chandan on your boat." They had some big, big blocks of Gopi Chandan that they used to balance the weight of the boat. So they brought him some lumps of Gopi Chandan. Sri Padmavacharya was very happy with this. There are several versions of the story. According to the Akhara, what happened was the devotees carried it. He said, "Bring it back to Udupi, this Gopi Chandan." They carried it a little way. And then they placed it on the ground, and the Gopi Chandan just split open in two pieces. And emerging from that was the beautiful deity of Udupi Krishna. So beautiful, so effulgent. All the devotees started offering obeisances, surrendering them to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna. The place where that happened, there is a deity of Lord Balaram, which we will go to after this. The actual place where the deity personally revealed himself to Sri Padmavacharya. He told the devotees to carry the deity back to Udupi. The deity became so heavy at that point that 30 men could not even take him off the ground. Why? Because Sri Padmavacharya was his dear devotee, and he wanted to accept service from him. So Sri Padmavacharya, with his two hands, lifted the deity and personally carried him back to Udupi. As he carried him back, he was in so much ecstasy that he composed the last six chapters of the Dvadasa Stotram. He brought him to Madhva Sarovar, that beautiful little body of water behind the temple. And there he bathed the deity. The story of that kund is very significant. One time, Achyuta Pareksha, Madhvacharya wanted to leave his guru to go to the Ganges. But Achyuta Pareksha said, no, please do not go, please do not go. So at that time, a voice came in the sky and spoke and said that the river, that Ganges is personally coming to fill this lake for the pleasure of Sri Padmavacharya. And it is none different than the Ganges. And it also pronounced that every 12 years, this lake will be transformed into the Ganges. So Madhvacharya bathed there very happily, without leaving Udupi, took his bath in Ganga. So it was in that water that he bathed the deity and cleaned him very nicely of all the mud and Gopi Chandan. And then he had the people of Udupi construct a temple for the deity. The people of Udupi, they were willing to construct any type of temple, even a large, magnificent, opulent temple. But Madhvacharya specifically wanted a very, very simple temple. And he wanted to maintain very, very high standards. The story of this deity's past is very, very purifying to hear. When Krishna was living in Dwaraka, one time Devaki his beloved mother, she approached him. Yashoda Mai, she had the good fortune of seeing your Vrindavan Leela, where you performed your childhood pastimes of stealing butter and having all wonderful sports with your little Gopa friends. I desire to see those pastimes. Can you show them to me? So Dwarkadish Krishna transformed his form into Bal Gopal. And right in front of his mother, first he started drinking milk from her breast, which was already dried up long ago. And then he went to a place where there was butter and he cracked the pot. And he picked up a churning rod and picked up a rope and started performing all of these beautiful pastimes of Makan Chor, Bal Gopal. And Devaki was in ecstasy. Such ecstasy she has never experienced ever before. Meanwhile, as Dwarkadish was little baby Bal Gopal running around doing mischief, Rukmini, his queen, happened to see this. And she fell in love with Krishna in this form, like never before. And she prayed to Krishna that she could worship this form. So a deity was manifested, the deity of Krishna. One hand he's holding churning rod for butter, and the other hand he's holding the rope that turns the churning rod for the churning of butter. That was worshipped in the innermost sanctum of Rukmini's palace. After Krishna disappeared from the world, Arjuna took his goons, and the goons also disappeared very soon to return to Vaikuntha to be reunited with the Lord. At that time, the deity Arjuna personally placed him in a place called Rukminivan, where Gopichandan is found. And over the years, the deity became completely lost and was dug out of that Gopitalab, and nobody knew it was a deity. They just thought it was a big lump of Gopichandan. But actually it was Krishna's inconceivable leela that he wanted to travel from Dwarka to Udupi to be personally worshipped by his dear servant and devotee, Shripad Madhvacharya. Madhvacharya then personally became the pujari of that deity, began to establish incredible standards. 9 pujas a day, absolute perfect cleanliness. He was in ecstasy worshipping that deity. And he started training some of his senior most sannyasi disciples to also worship the deity. The deity worship was so full of devotion, so full of joy. There was so much energy all around Udupi, everyone just bringing the best things they had to be offered to Krishna. That in this entire region of Karnataka, when people experience the higher taste of seeing Udupi Krishna and seeing the way the devotees were worshipping Udupi Krishna, absolutely no one had any inclination to the Mayavadi school of thought. Because it's one thing to philosophically be convinced, but it's another thing to experience the higher taste. Shripad Madhvacharya especially wanted to install that deity to give people the higher taste of direct personal service to the Supreme Form of the Lord by having his darshan, by remembering him, by offering prayers to him, by chanting his holy name.
Hare Krishna! Hare Krishna! Krishna Krishna! Hare Hare! Hare Ram! Hare Ram! Ram Ram! Hare Hare!
everything in this whole area was centered around just trying to assist Sripad Madhvacharya in his loving devotional service to Krishna. At that time, every day, for hours, in the Ananteshwar temple, he would preach his philosophy, the philosophy of Vedavyas. Ananteshwar temple, that place is still there today. There's a little section, about 3 cubits by 3 cubits, where Sripad Madhvacharya would preach. But in order to preserve it, now it's very enclosed. But it is said in those days, that was an open courtyard, where hundreds and hundreds of people could sit all around him to hear him preach. He preached the glories of bhakti, and the illusion of Mayavad philosophy. People by the hundreds and the thousands were coming from all around to hear him speak. Some were curious, who is this Madhvacharya we're hearing about? Some were atheists, some were Mayavadis. But whoever came, after hearing him speak, they all accepted initiation from him and started practicing the pure principles of devotional service. In this way, Sripad Madhvacharya established a high seat of devotional Vaishnavism in Udupi. Years went by. He had a great longing to visit his beloved spiritual master, Srila Vyasadeva, once again in Badrikashram. He took about 50 or so of his very senior disciples with him. Of course, Satya Tirtha was with him, and another sannyasi named Upendra Tirtha. As far as Narahari Tirtha, he was still the regent king. And as far as Padmanabh Tirtha, Shobhana Bhatta previously, he was preaching and making thousands and thousands of people devotees in Andhra Pradesh. Madhvacharya with his followers began their journey to Badrikashram. Many wonderful things happened in that journey. Do I have time to speak some of them? He came to that great holy state of Maharashtra. There was a district of Maharashtra called Devagiri. Is that still today?
Aurangabad. Today it is called Aurangabad.
Aurangabad. At Devagiri, there was a king. He was a devotee of Lord Shiva. His name was Mahadev. Very cruel, wicked king. He did not like to waste any money. So any type of public projects he had, whoever he would see, he would just kidnap them and force them to be slaves to work for him. So Madhvacharya and his devotees were walking, and all of a sudden they were apprehended by the military of Mahadev. It's described that at that time they told him and his disciples that you have to pick up spades and shovels and dig a lake. Maharaj Mahadev's order. And if you didn't do what they said, you were beaten, imprisoned, or killed. That was the law. So Sripad Madhvacharya said, but we're Swamijis. We don't know anything about this digging. So let me meet your king, and I want to speak to him. It's bad enough seeing the soldiers. Nobody wanted to meet the king. He was notorious for his cruelty. So Madhvacharya went right up to the king and said, if you want us to do a good job, then you have to teach us how to dig, because we don't know this digging. So here's the shovel, you go to the lake and teach us. the king was so bewildered by the charm and the spiritual potency of Madhvacharya that he completely lost all of his intelligence. He said, "Yes, I will show you." So he went to the lake, he and all of his soldiers, they all started digging and digging. And they got so absorbed in digging due to their bewildered state that they forgot all about anything else. So Sripad Madhvacharya smiled and with his followers continued their journey to Badrinath. As the king continued digging the lake. Another time, a gang of hundreds of thieves, robbers, they came to attack Madhvacharya's entourage. They had deadly weapons, swords, knives, bludgeons, clubs. They were cruel, greedy demons. The spirit soul is part and parcel of Krishna. The spirit soul, by nature, has love for Krishna within it. But covered by the modes of material nature, we become so much victimized that due to greed, people engage in the most abominable activities. They became robbers and killers just for some wealth. The flickering wealth of this transient world. They surrounded Madhvacharya's people and attacked. But this was no danger for Sripad Madhvacharya. What he did is he took a piece of cloth and wrapped it up like this and then threw it in the air. Now the devotees, all they saw was a piece of cloth. But the thieves, they saw the cloth to be a big ball of precious pure gold. So they all went running for this gold. And each one of them wanted it. They started fighting over it. They all took out their swords and fought and fought and fought until every one of them killed each other over a ball of useless cloth, which somehow or other they misconceive to be gold. And there's a great lesson to this. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita that one who has proper spiritual vision, he sees gold and pebbles and stones with equal vision. He doesn't discriminate, because what is gold? And what is stone? What is wood? What is sand? It's all just mixtures of various degrees of the material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether. That's all. It's all matter. You can't eat it. You can't take it with you after death. It can't bring you any real happiness. It's just dead matter. But somehow or other, we put a value to things according to our conditioned state of consciousness. Just like, for instance, we go to Vrindavan and we bring back some dirt from Vrindavan and we eat it every day. Now, materialistic people would say, "What nonsense, you're eating dirt." Now, you take a stone from Gopadan Hill or Shila, and we worship it, we surrender to it, we weep and cry, trying to please it. Now, a materialistic person is thinking, "What is this? It's just a piece of stone." Now, for a devotee, he sees materialistic people, they worship their Mercedes-Benz. And we say, "What is it? It's just a piece of steel." They wear beautiful jewelries of diamonds and gold and silver. And they're all, it's such a prestigious, valuable asset to their life. But to a devotee, it's just a whole mess of yellow stool smeared all over the person's neck. He doesn't see any value to it. It's useless. Does it give inner peace? Does it give ecstasy? Does it give love? But people are very, due to the illusory energy, we put values to things that are useless. Actually, everything in this material world is useless, unless it's used in Krishna's service to help bring about the awakening of real wealth within the heart. So greed was the cause of these people's uniting to be robbers, and that same greed created enemies to the extent that they all killed each other. This is material life. Nitaigo Pramandi. Madhvacharya and his followers were simply laughing as they saw this. And they got good realizations. Another day, as they were traveling through the forest, another band of hundreds of dacoits attacked with swords. Screaming all kinds of obscene words. At that time, one of the simple sannyasi disciples, Upendra Tirtha, he was just a very simple, humble devotee. All of a sudden, something just came over him. He just ran up to one of the dacoits and pushed him down and took the sword out of his hands. And personally started fighting all the hundreds of dacoits who all had swords and started sword fighting with them. With such mastery. He was like the world champion of all sword fighters. Devotees were shocked because he was such a peace-loving person that from his very childhood, he never in his life even picked up a stick to try to hit someone with. And here he was with the sword, fighting, dancing around, and he was defeating everyone. He fought with such dexterity. The devotees were shocked. They were stunned. How is this? This is Upendra Tirtha. It's the little, weak, skinny sannyasi we've always known. How is he doing this? And then they looked over to Madhvacharya, who was just sitting there, and they could understand that he was empowering him to do this. Upendra Tirtha fought with such incredible valor that all the thieves ran away for their lives, never to return. On another day, some robbers came to attack. They were in a little distant place. They saw Sri Padmadvacharya's entourage. When they were about to pounce on them, they saw that every devotee turned into a piece of rock. What is this? There's no more people, there's just rocks. They were bewildered. And then they saw them turn into people walking again. And then they were about to attack. They turned into rocks again. How do you attack rocks? They were rubbing their eyes. What are we seeing? What are we not seeing? Who is this? Where is this? Who are we? Then they turned into people again. Then they realized that this is the power of the leader of these great souls. And all the robbers came and fell at the feet of Madhvacharya. They all surrendered to him and accepted initiation to be his followers. Shibad Madhvacharya ki. As they were traveling through the forest, approaching the Himalayas, a vicious tiger pounced upon Satya Tirtha with his claws and his mighty jaws. He was just about to devour him when Madhvacharya effortlessly, it appeared that he just touched him in the head, but that touch had such force that the tiger fell to the ground dead. Satya Tirtha was very shaken up. He was just the tiger already had his body in his jaws. It was a helpless situation. Then he saw the tiger laying there, and his Guru Maharaj had given him life. He had given him both spiritual life as well as physical life. And this only increased his unmotivated, uninterrupted surrender to his spiritual master's lotus feet. They came to Badrikashram. Again, they worshipped the deity of Nara Narayan, and then Shripad Madhvacharya went all by himself to the upper Badri, where Vedavyas was residing. There, with tears of ecstatic love in his eyes, he fell at Srila Vedavyasa's feet. His Guru Maharaj lifted him up and embraced him. And all the great Mahatmas, who are the associates of Srila Vedavyasa, welcomed him with such devotion and care. He sat for many days, hearing Srila Vedavyasa speaking. Every word was ambrosial nectar to his heart. At that time, Srila Vyasa presented as a gift to his favorite pupil 8 Shalagram Shivas that were his own personal deities that he worshipped. And he also gave Shripad Madhvacharya his blessings to write a commentary on Mahabharata. He told him how to do it. Mahabharata is over 100,000 slokas. It's a massive literature. He told Shripad Madhvacharya to write a very short exposition which embodied the essence of Mahabharata. 32 chapters. Because Mahabharata deals with karma kanda, jnana kanda, and all other types of social and even materialistic subject matters to gradually elevate people to a higher state of consciousness. But he extracted the very essence of devotion to Krishna and explained the whole Mahabharata exclusively from that point of view. On his way down from Badrikashram, he came to the river Ganges. When he was at the Ganges at this point, there was all kinds of violence between different ruling kingdoms. And therefore, there was absolutely no boats. There was no way to cross the Ganges. It was very, very torrential, the way it was flowing so hard. So the devotees were there for a long time, days, no eating, no drinking, nothing. So Madhvacharya all of a sudden disappeared. This made things worse. First of all, we can't cross. We're all alone. There's all kinds of warring tribes and armies, and now our fearless leader's gone. We don't know where he is. What he did, Madhvacharya, is he just entered into the Ganges and he just walked underwater across. And when he got to the other side, he came out of the Ganges, and all these people on the other side saw him come out of the Ganges. And he was perfectly dry. His clothes didn't even have any moisture on it. And he started to preach Dvaita philosophy. People were amazed. They brought him to the king. The king, upon meeting him, he was such a charming personality. They wanted to do anything for him. He said, send boats to my followers. So they were in total distress. Where is our Guru Maharaj? What are we going to do? And then all of a sudden they saw these big, beautiful royal ferries come to pick them up and take them across the Ganges. And when they got off the boat to the other side of the Ganges, There they saw their Guru Maharaj preaching to thousands and thousands of people the glories of devotional service. And another time, they came to another area of the Ganges. This is near Delhi. And again, there was no boats to cross. And there were soldiers there that told, if you cross over, you will be killed because it's a Muslim army. So don't cross over. Sri Padmavacharya, he told all the devotees to hold each other's hands, and he just walked across. Even though the Ganges was so deep and flowing so hard, none of them, the water went over their necks. They just somehow or other, just by holding the parampara of Madhvacharya's hands, they all crossed over. And then the soldiers were about to arrest him. He said, I want to see your king. They brought him to the king. And Madhvacharya was just such a beautifully compassionate person that he spoke to the king in perfect Persian language with such philosophical expertise and with such respect and grace that the king's heart melted and he worshipped Sri Padmavacharya and gave him all facilities. He took his devotees to Hastinapur and they also went to Kurukshetra. While at Kurukshetra, Sri Padmavacharya was immersed in his mood of Bhimasena in his previous birth or incarnation. And he was explaining all about the great battle of Mahabharata. As he was explaining it, he was explaining it as not someone who had just read the scripture, but someone who had fought the battle. And he was glorifying Bhimasena, how he, with his club, he was destroying entire elephant armies of Kurus. He was smashing the heads of elephants, and they were falling dead. What to speak of the warriors on top of the elephants. Then he went to a particular place, and dug a little earth from the ground, and pulled out the original club that Bhimasena fought in Kurukshetra battle. And told all the devotees all about that club. Then he put it back in the ground and it has never been seen again since. He then went to Varanasi, which is, since many long ages, the high seat of the Mayavad philosophy in northern India. There he sat on the banks of the river Ganges, inviting everyone and anyone to come and hear his refutation of everything Shankaracharya ever said. He claimed that the Sariraka Bhasya, the commentary of Brahma Sutras by Shankaracharya, was simply illusory, offensive interpretation. And therefore, to cleanse the world of this evil, he produced his own commentary. This was a great challenge to the people of Varanasi. But nobody could stand before him. He spent weeks and weeks and weeks in Varanasi preaching. And one of the leading persons was a scholar named Indra Puri. And much detail could be given about their debate. He was saying that karma, jnana, everything is an illusion. Sri Padmavacharya said that karma, action, is used in the service of Krishna, or the jnana, knowledge, is used in the service of Krishna. It is eternal. It is transcendent. And they debated on this point, and ultimately Indra Puri was defeated. to the great amazement of all the residents of Varanasi. But in Gopura we had some disciples. This is an interesting story, please be awake. These disciples were really puffed up. Not because they were great scholars, but because they were weightlifters and wrestlers. And they were always working out and sweating, something like behind the Juhu temple. They have people like that there. And they were very proud and they were talking about how I have wrestled and I have defeated and I have lifted this. And Sri Padmavacharya, he happened to overhear them. And he was disgusted. He was kind of laughing. What is this nonsense? They're disciples of this big Mayavadi and they're so attached to their bodies? So he understood that for this class of people, there's no use talking philosophy. So he said that, oh, you are all thinking yourself, yes, we are so strong. He said, I challenge you to fight. You can either run by one or all together come. One by one, they ran toward him with all their big muscles and all their wrestling techniques, and Madhvacharya just laughing and just picked him up and threw him on the ground. They were very much humiliated. They all together attacked him. And he was just laughing and picking each one up and throwing them to the ground, throwing them to the ground, throwing them to the ground. And meanwhile, there was a huge assembly of people watching this. And those people surrendered to Sri Padmavacharya. Because he understood these people are so much on the bodily platform of life, the only way I'll convince them is by showing the superiority of Krishna consciousness on the bodily concept of life. So by doing that, many of them surrendered. This was his great mercy. They went to a vicinity called the Rishikesh section. And there was a Shiva temple. Lord Shiva appeared to Madhvacharya and told him, please come to this place, Rishikesh. Meanwhile, the pujari of the temple, who was very, very much a very great devotee of Lord Shiva and very influential, Lord Shiva revealed to him that this person coming is the greatest of all acharyas. Now, practically, whenever Sri Padmavacharya came to a place, especially a place of Shankarites and Shivites, it was always like a his coming and putting his feet on that place was like a declaration of war. That's the way it was perceived. But this particular great Shivite, knowing him to be the greatest of all devotees, to the great surprise of all the followers of Madhva, when they arrived in that village, there was thousands of people with garlands, chandan, gifts, prasad, marching bands, kirtans, everything to welcome Sri Padmavacharya. They put him on a palanquin and took him on a procession. He continued his travels back to Udupi. He came to Goa, where we're all going tomorrow morning. When he arrived in Goa, everywhere he went, he preached the doctrine of pure devotional service. But it is explained, he wanted his visit to be remembered forever, even by the common people. So he would do things just to make his visit rememberable. Because when they remember his visit, they also remember what he said. So he went to one place and they offered him some prasad. In a matter of a few minutes, he ate 4,000 bananas. And you know, the bananas in Goa are very big. They're not these little bananas like Maharashtra. 4,000 bananas. And he just, after eating, he just continued preaching the glories of Krishna consciousness. He returned to the Anandeshwar temple in Udupi, where he would sit for hours and hours and hours a day, preaching. He was becoming so well known that the Mayavadi leaders of the Sringeri Math were becoming very, very much worried that he was literally dismantling their whole establishment philosophically. If you remember, Vidya Shankar was the Shankaracharya of Sringeri Math. He was very old. He had left his body, and the person that followed him was a sannyasi named Padmatirtha. He was so much aggrieved. Every day, message after message after message was coming to Sringeri Math describing all the incredible victories of Sri Padmadvacharya and his Tattvavadi school. Meanwhile, the pandits and the other sannyasis of Sringeri, even the congregational members, they were uncontrollably angry. And you know what human nature is like. When things go wrong, who do you blame? You blame your leader. Just like in ISKCON today, there's a class of people, anything that ever went wrong in ISKCON or in their lives, they blame Prabhupada, even for their own mistakes. This is the nature of the ego. So, and this is something very unfortunate. So what we have seen in this case is the people were approaching Padmatirtha and saying, "You are useless, you are impotent, you are a disgrace to your position." This Madhvacharya, he's just going around victory after victory. Millions of people are becoming his followers. And what are you doing? You're just sitting here doing nothing. You're a coward. You're a fool. Do something about it. In his heart, he was deathly afraid of Madhvacharya. But he could not admit it to his followers. So he came together with the biggest leaders to make a strategy of how to destroy the cult of Madhvacharya. They decided a three-prong strategy. First, because still they had tradition and they had the majority of people throughout India following them. Even though in this area Madhvacharya was growing a lot, in the Udupi area, still the rest of India was under Shankaracharya's control. So they decided they would send out learned pundits to the street corners, to the marketplaces, to the temples, with literature and speaking very loudly that Madhvacharya's ideology is totally bogus, it is speculation, and anyone who has any faith in the holy scriptures must reject it. It's a dangerous, strange, speculative cult. Stay away from it. If you talk to them, if you see them, you'll get contaminated. They're demons, they're rascals, they're cheaters. They printed literature, and they were sending both their pundits as well as their congregational members everywhere distributing this knowledge. And they were making up terrible, terrible blasphemous things against him and his followers. Immoralities, everything. This was the first prong of the strategy, to totally discredit them by propaganda. The second is to make social laws, because they had the control of the Brahminical castes, that anyone who in any way adopts to the teachings of Madhvacharya will be an outcast from that day on. He cannot be a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or even a Shudra. He loses his caste. He's not allowed in temples anymore. He has no more any rights as a Hindu. And that's very powerful. Because most people don't want to deal with that kind of oppression. And the third was to defeat him in a debate. So one of the very great scholars named Pundarik Puri, he along with Padmatirtha came to Udupi. And they challenged Sri Padmavacharya to a debate. They knew that Sri Padmavacharya's strength of his knowledge as well as his influence over others was he had a magnificent library. This library contains all the works that he had personally written, plus all the great holy scriptures that he quoted from. They decided, we'll debate, and if somehow or other that doesn't work, we will rob him of his entire library of books, which would be a thrashing blow. Just like Prabhupada said, books are the basis, they understood this too. If we take all of the books that he has written and all the scriptures that he cites, which was such a rare library, you can't get those books easily, then the basis of all of his teachings will be finished. And his cult will be destroyed. Padmatirtha and Pundarik Puri debated in Udupi, just outside of Udupi with Sri Padmavacharya. He defeated them so soundly that it was to go on for many days, but after the first day they were so beaten down, confused and bewildered, they just couldn't stand before him, they couldn't speak before him. But Madhvacharya said, tomorrow we will continue. But that night, in the middle of the night, they disappeared. The next morning, the librarian of Sri Padmavacharya, whose name was Shankaracharya, he came forward and said, the library has been stolen. There's not a single book left in it. Sri Padmavacharya was very upset. This Mayavadi leader, he has disappeared in the night along with all the books. Let's find them. Immediately, very rapidly, Sri Padmavacharya and his followers started chasing after them. But the Shankaracharya went very fast. Finally, they came to a kingdom, not too far. The king's name was Jayasingha. When Jayasingha heard that Madhvacharya had come to his kingdom, he personally welcomed him. Sripad Madhvacharya started a little mutt there. And the king actually took off all his royal clothes and just lived as a member of his ashram because he wanted to see how Madhvacharya lived. He was so impressed. He would rise early in the morning. He would do his chanting, he would do his deity worship with the deities, his shalagram shilas he would carry. He would sit in prayer for hours and hours a day, and he would preach from morning till night. He was fully engrossed in devotional service, and yet he was so humble and so full of all attractive qualities as a devotee that Jai Singha surrendered to him. The king. Madhvacharya asked him, where is that library of my books? Jai Singha said that Padmatirtha gave those books to me to keep in safekeeping because he considered me a follower. But now I'm your follower, so I will give all the books back to you. So he returned the library Tatramasya happened to come at that time. So Sri Padmavacharya stayed in that area of the kingdom. The greatest scholar in the whole court of the king, his name was Pandit Trivikramacharya. He saw that so many pundits and scholars were coming and they were all surrendering to Madhvacharya after hearing him. But this disturbed him very much because he was a great proponent of the Advaita philosophy as well. So he was thinking, at the right moment, I'm going to watch him, I'm going to listen to him, I'm going to know him thoroughly, then I'm going to challenge him. He came every day, week after week, just examining. And then at the opportune moment, one day, he challenged to a debate. This was a glorious debate. Just the sound that Pandit Trivikram is going to debate with Madhvacharya attracted thousands of people to come and hear. After speaking for some days, Pandit Trivikram understood that what he is speaking is the perfection of all knowledge. And he surrendered. He was a Grihastha. He became one of the greatest of all the proponents of Vaishnava philosophy. In fact, Pandit Trivikram Acharya's son was known as Pandit Narayan Acharya. And he personally was there and saw his father's defeat. He was personally there to see his father's total surrender. And from that day on, he personally watched the life of Sri Padmavacharya. And it is the son of Pandit Trivikram, Narayan Acharya, that was the author of the authorized biography, Madhava Vijaya, of Sri Padmavacharya. And whatever we're speaking today is coming from this illustrious work, which is accepted by all the great Vaishnavas of the Madhva Sampradaya. Pandit Trivikram Acharya was so dear to the Lord that the Lord entrusted him to write a commentary on his commentary of the Vedanta Sutras. Because Sri Padmavacharya did everything very briefly. Pandit Trivikram Acharya's commentary is celebrated to this very day. There's only one other commentary that is considered even more worshipable than that of Sri Padmavacharya's Vedanta Sutra. And that is the great Acharya named Jayatirtha, who came a couple generations later. The story of Jayatirtha is this. When Madhvacharya would go to a debate, he would carry his books in a bullock cart. And there was one oxen that was very dear to Madhvacharya. He was the one who carried his books for him. And sometimes when Madhvacharya would be speaking, even to his own followers, he would be looking more at this oxen than his own disciples. Sometimes disciples even became envious of the oxen. It is said that that oxen took his next birth as the great Acharya Jayatirtha, who's in our Madhva Parampara, you will see. And he wrote the most illustrious commentary of Madhvacharya's commentary of Vedanta Sutra. Meanwhile, if you remember at Pajakshetra, we were discussing Madhyageha Bhatt, how he was very much attached to his son, but there was some solace because he had another son. And in their old age, that other son took care of Madhyageha Bhatta and Vedavati with such attention and care. He managed the estate of his father. He nursed his father and mother. He was very, very responsible in every sense. But because of always hearing about the glories of his older brother, he was totally detached from everything. In his heart, he just wanted to leave it all and just surrender to his brother and become a sannyasi. But he had to perform his duty because that was the will of his brother. Meanwhile, Madhyageha Bhatta and Vedavati, they were so very, very proud of Sri Padmadvacharya. Sometimes they would even come to Udupi in their old age to listen to his lectures. And their hearts would just be so swollen with pride, tears flowing from their eyes. What a perfect, perfect son we have. How Krishna has fulfilled all our desires. Their sorrow had been washed away by the ecstasy of their love for his mission. They were pure devotees of the Lord. And in their old age, they both gave up their bodies, remembering the glories of Lord Krishna, and returned to Vaikuntha. When the parents left this world, the son immediately came to Sri Padmadvacharya near Udupi. There he begged him to give him sannyas. His whole life he was just wrangling with paying the taxes and paying the debts and taking care of his parents. Madhvacharya was so happy to see his brother totally detached from all these things. What happened is Madhvacharya was great. He tested him. He told him, now it is the Chaturmasya. You wait and you do menial service humbly for 4 months and then we will decide. Seeing his great, great determination, in a place, I don't remember the name of this place, but it's very close to Udupi. There he gave sannyas to his brother, named him Vishnu Tirtha. At that time, in that place, he also initiated 7 other sannyasis. And it was on that day that he entrusted the worship of Udupi Krishna to those 8 sannyasi disciples. He established 8 mats under each of those sannyasis, one of them being his own brother, and told them that from this point on, you will rotate. At that time, I believe it was every 2 months that they rotate the deity worship. And whoever has the paryaya is directly the representative of Madhvacharya. There's a seat where Madhvacharya would sit in the temple. And only the paryaya swami is allowed to sit on that seat. Therefore, he is as worshipable as Madhvacharya. And only he is allowed to take full charge of the deity worship and the whole temple affairs. Later on, one great devotee named Badiraj, he extended it from 2 months to 2 years, which is the system that is being followed even today. Vishnu Tirtha, he loved solitude. At one time, he just went to a cave high in the mountains and would just fast and just constantly pray and chant. But 2 of his disciples asked him to come back down to Udupi. So he did. And Madhvacharya accepted him for his nature. Madhvacharya was constantly in Anandeshwar temple preaching, 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 and his brother just always wanted to be alone, just chanting and praying. So Madhvacharya wanted to give him a place where he could do that. There's a mountain called Subramanya in the middle of a beautiful forest. And there Shripad Madhvacharya established a Subramanya Math and gave him one of his Shalagram Shilas. In fact, he gave one Shalagram Shila that Vedavyas gave to all of the eight sannyasis who were the leaders of the months. And to this day, the standard has continued very beautifully. By this time, Madhvacharya was growing quite old. But even in his old age, his mental and physical strength remained perfectly intact. One day, a very famous strong man wrestler, whose name was Kodanjati, he came and was displaying his great strength in Udupi. So Madhvacharya said, "Oh, you think you're so strong?" "Yes, I am so strong." And he had a disciple who was also a strong man and a wrestler with him. So Madhvacharya said, "I want to test your strength." Madhvacharya was very expert at humbling people who were puffed up. He put his toe on the ground and told the strong wrestler that I challenge you to separate my toe from the ground. He and his disciple, with all their might, were pulling and pulling and pulling and pushing and shoving. It is explained that their muscles were bulging, their veins were coming out, their foam was coming out of their mouths, and they were making the most horrible sounds. But they couldn't move his toe from the ground. They spent hours like this until they were toe so totally exhausted that they fell to the ground in exasperation. Then Madhvacharya effortlessly lifted his own toe from the ground. Another time, this very, very powerful person who was broadcasting that nobody could defeat me in physical strength, I challenge anyone to fight. Madhvacharya was at the time old. He was in his late 70s. He said, "Oh, you think you're very strong?" He said, "I'm going to sing. I want you. You can squeeze and do anything you want to my throat to get the notes of my voice to be off key." So he started singing this beautiful bhajan in very high-pitched sound. And this strong wrestler, with his hands, he was squeezing his throat as high as he could for hours and hours. He was punching it and squeezing it and doing everything he could to it. But not a single note even trembled as Madhvacharya sang. Anumanji ki. Vimasena ki. Three months and 16 days before the appearance of Shripad Madhvacharya was the first time in all these years that the great Acharya saw his dear beloved disciple, Narahari Tirtha, who had ruled the kingdom up until this point. It is explained by the biographer, Narayan Acharya, that Shripad Madhvacharya had decided to disappear from this world. But before leaving, he wanted to personally worship these deities of Sitaram. After the king had grown to age, Narahari Tirtha asked him for donation. "In your treasury there's these deities. Please give them to me." He brought them to Shripad Madhvacharya, who in transcendental ecstasy bowed down in full obeisances before the deities of Sitaram and installed them in the worship of his sampradaya. And they're worshipped even to this day, it is said. He was 79 years of age. He appeared on Vijayadashami. It was on the ninth day of the bright moon of the month of Magha. And Shripad Madhvacharya was sitting in the Ananta Ishwar temple, preaching the glories of Krishna consciousness, as he had done for so many long years before. On that day, his most intimate associates and disciples were gathered around him as he preached from his favorite of the Upanishads, the Aitareya Upanishad. On that holy day, in that holy place, Sripad Madhvacharya's body disappeared right in front of their eyes. They only saw flowers shower from the sky on his asana. Sripad Madhvacharya told them that very soon I will leave your company to return to my beloved Guru Maharaj in Badrikashram. Sripad Madhvacharya's life is most glorious and purifying to hear. He is one of the great forefathers that we worship in our Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. Today we are hearing this narration on the very place in the seashore where his worshipable deity appeared before him. Actually, we have spoken, according to his history, many of the incredible miracles that he performed. But those who are true Vaishnavas understand that these miracles, although they're very pleasing to the heart to hear, are very secondary. In fact, most acharyas, even if they have the power to perform miracles, will never do it, because they have a tendency to attract materialistic people. But because he is directly an avatar of Vayu, Bhima and Hanuman, it is his very special position to perform these extraordinary activities. But the true glory of Sripad Madhvacharya is the life of devotion and the uncompromising preaching of Vaishnava philosophy, and how he changed people's hearts, and how to this day he's changing people's hearts by those qualities. Sripad Madhvacharya's favorite book was Srimad Bhagavatam. Although he utilized so many other literatures to preach the essence of Krishna consciousness, in his own free time, it was his greatest pastime of pleasure to recite and to study Srimad Bhagavatam. In fact, Srila Prabhupada, he often quotes in his books the commentaries of Sripad Madhvacharya's commentary of the Bhagavatam. Appreciating him and worshipping him as one of our great, great acharyas. So people who are less intelligent, they may think and speak, you know, what is this Hare Krishna movement? Is this just some upstart new religion? Is this some contemporary fashion in the name of spirituality? Because more or less, in India, in the whole world, people are ignorant of real spiritual tradition. Srila Prabhupada went to the West and came back to India. What is he preaching? What is it that we are given? It is the greatest, deepest spiritual heritage of culture, philosophy, and history. That is what he has given to us. So it is very important to combat within our own minds against materialistic propaganda, that we understand very clearly the depth and the greatness of our spiritual heritage. And this is one of the great benedictions that we have received by coming to Udupi, by seeing the temple that at one time was the very heart and center of our sampradaya, and seeing how the puja is going on, and seeing how so many hundreds and thousands of people are honoring and respecting the spiritual line that we have accepted. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the Supreme Lord Krishna, appeared within the Madhva Sampradaya. Although Lord Chaitanya does not require any sampradaya, because he is God. His teachings are the source of all sampradayas. But in the role of a devotee, he was very careful to teach that if you want true Krishna consciousness, genuine spirituality, you must accept spiritual master in a bona fide sampradaya. So to give that message to the world, the Lord personally accepted initiation from Ishwara Puri, the disciple of Madhavendra Puri, the disciple of Lakshmipati Tirtha, who was a descendant of Sripad Madhvacharya, who was the disciple of Vedavyas, who was the disciple of Narada, who is the disciple of Rama, who personally received knowledge from Krishna. So in this very holy place, on this very special day, in the presence of Srimad Jananivas Prabhu, we are gratefully praying for the mercy of Sripad Madhvacharya and all of our beloved predecessors, that they can give us strength, knowledge, and purity by which we can continue on in the loving service of the Lord and progress back home, back to Godhead, and never give up the service of the Vaishnavas. Never give up the philosophical conclusions of Srimad Bhagavatam. And never give up the most precious gift of the Yuga Dharma, the congregational chanting of Krishna's holy name.
Hey Krishna! Hey Krishna! 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 Hey! Hare Ram! Hare Ram! Ram Ram! Hare Hare!
You are chanting the holy names like people who are very tired and hungry. We especially chose to give this lecture today in this place for several reasons. The internal reason is because it's such a holy place for Madhvacharya. It's where Krishna appeared to him. But the esoteric external reason I have not told you. I knew that this would be such a long, boring lecture that you would all be sleeping. So I chose a place where these little red ants would keep biting at people to help keep you awake. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.